Okay. It says all bags and backpacks must be checked in at reception. Great.
Earlier than that today?
I don't know. I don't know.
First, we have to see Dr. Levy.
I know. Byron.
Yes,
Byron.
Okay, yeah, I did look at that too. I don't really need to see Dave for any reason. Disagreement with my landlord, so I really hope I can go over to Victoria. Otherwise, I'm kind of screwed for a place.
Oh, right, right. Well, we'll just sort of hold on until we know for sure.
Okay.
Right. Well, thanks for coming, Jess. See if I can get you in front of Dr. Levy.
Yeah.
Just got a couple of things to wrap up. I don't quite just before you, but I'm hoping to get you in by day.
Yeah.
Sure. How long would you think I'll have to wait?
Honestly, I really don't know. Could be as short as 10 minutes, could be half an hour.
Okay, no problem.
You have the file there. If it's an interpreter, I just put your location down.
I
You want me to let my bag out of my sight?
Yes.
In something that's not good.
Yeah.
You people think that I actually trust you that much.
And do you have any recording device for me?
No. You want to take my telephone too?
Yeah, I need to have all recording devices. Anything else in your pocket?
No.
I just wanted to get a yellow pad. I didn't have any.
Mr. Fox?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Dr. Levy. Pleased to meet you, sir. Come on down with me. Lee's going to join us in a sec.
Gee, can I get my writing pad? Am I allowed to have that? Can I take notes during this? Or
if you take notes for me, it would make it a lot easier. I wouldn't have to sprain my wrist.
Actually, I was being serious, though.
Oh, were you?
Yes.
Well, if you like.
But it's in my laptop bag.
Sure.
Which you guys took.
Well, ask Lee there if you want to get that, sure.
Yes.
You wanted to get a notepad as well.
Yes, of course. Do you have one or do you have
I have one in my bag. Which?
This one? Where shall I sit?
Oh, right there is good if you don't mind.
If I may, yes.
Thank you.
Oh, I see. Sure.
Have you met already, or?
Yeah.
Oh, just out there. Yeah. Well, hi. My name is Dr. Levy. I'm a doctor, a psychiatrist, that's been asked to see you today.
Mm-hmm. Jewish?
Levy.
I'm asking because I'm Jewish.
Oh, okay. Well, Levy is a Jewish name, that's for sure.
That's why I'm asking. But no, I'm asking if you're Jewish.
Is a lot of people.
Well, yes, I would like you better if you were.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm afraid I have to admit I'm a bit of a mutt.
All right.
Yeah. So, what would you prefer I address you as? Mr. Fox? Or
I don't care.
What's your first name?
Patrick.
Patrick. Tell me what you prefer.
I usually just go by Fox.
Okay. Just plain Fox?
Yeah.
Fox, can I just find some information about you? Well, starting off, how old you are?
45.
Where do you live?
Currently at the Belkin House, homeless. I was released from custody December 30th. I have no status in Canada, can't work, and the court knew this, but they imposed this probation condition anyway, that I'm not allowed to leave British Columbia for 3 years.
Oh my God.
I'm in the process of trying to get that vacated so that I could return to the U.S. or something. Mm-hmm. Look, I'll come right out and say this. I believe the reason the Crown wants this assessment is because they're hoping to get some kind of diagnosis that I have some mental illness, maybe delusions or something. I have evidence to support all of the beliefs that I have. Mm-hmm. The thing about being a United States citizen, I have documentation from IRCC and CBSA that clearly shows that I was born in the United States and I have no status in Canada. That's all in my bag and on my laptop. I have documents from IRCC showing that when I was deported to Canada, Homeland Security and the Canadian Consulate scribbled out and changed the information that I had put on the travel document application in order to get the travel document. So, he can go ahead and scream and say, oh, Mr. Fox is delusional, he's crazy, he has no idea what he's talking about, but I have evidence.
What's IRCC?
Immigration, Refugee, and Citizenship Canada.
Okay.
It used to be called Citizenship and Immigration Canada. And my beliefs about my ex-wife, the court said that my belief that she's a white supremacist and a racist are based only on two comments that she had made over a 6 or 7 year period, but that's incorrect. The evidence I submitted to the court was just those two pieces because that's the only evidence that I had. But I also lived with her for a year and a half and was married to her for a number of years.
Uh-huh.
So my belief is based on my firsthand experience with her over that period of time.
That she's a...
She's very racist.
She's
she hates
racist.
Mexicans.
Uh-huh. Gosh, how'd you get involved with her in the first place?
She was hot when she was young. I was 26, she was 19.
And you guys were together for how long?
A year and a half. But we had a child together.
Yeah.
I had custody of him, I raised him by myself, and she shows up in 2011, takes him, runs off to Arizona with him. We were living in Los Angeles.
At the time. Uh-huh. So you'd been separated for about how long before she came back and took your child away?
About 9 years, I guess.
Oh my gosh, that's a long time. And how did she manage to do that?
I was in custody. I was in Homeland Security custody at the time.
How come you were there?
Because they were trying to deport me. They were accusing me of being an illegal alien from Canada and trying to deport me.
So how did they believe that you were illegal?
They didn't believe. They knew who I was.
Yeah.
There's no question. I mean, if they believed that I was a Canadian citizen, they wouldn't have had to modify the documents or forge the documents. And I really wish that you guys would let me bring my laptop in here so I could show you these documents rather than me just saying it. It's one thing for a person to say, oh, I have evidence to support what I'm saying, but any delusional or crazy person would say that.
Mm-hmm. So you've got some documentation that shows that they had changed. What did they actually, did they change?
On the application for an emergency travel document, which is essentially a Canadian passport application, it asks where you were born, which country, etc. And so on there, I put U.S. They scribbled that out, they wrote Canada on it.
And what about for the place of birth? Usually put a city on it.
I think on one of the times, I put the state. Another time, I just put U.S. because it didn't matter which city or state I was born in. The fact is, I was born outside of Canada, and therefore, it doesn't matter where.
So where were you born?
Florida.
What part of Florida?
Is it relevant?
I just wondered.
Okay.
The big state.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, given that I've already stated that I believe the purpose of this is to try to get something that the Crown can use against me, obviously I'm not going to be any more cooperative than I need to in order to comply with the probation.
Sure, sure. Well, we do what we can. Maybe there's nothing we can do to be of help. We're just... Probably more. Is there anything that we can do to be of help to you? Not necessarily offering a diagnosis to Crown. That's kind of irrelevant for our purposes. I don't know if there's anything we can help you with.
I don't believe that there is anything that you can help me with. I believe that I'm psychologically stable. I have no mental illnesses that I would be aware of. But then again, somebody who did have mental illnesses would say that anyway.
How are you? Well, here you are in Canada.
I can't leave.
Homeless, or you're in a shelter right now. How are you supporting yourself?
I have some money that I borrowed.
So is it like, it's not really savings, it's borrowed money?
No, my savings is all gone. Because when I was arrested, I had automatic transfer set up to put money into my son's account every week for support and such.
Yeah.
And then over the time that I was in custody, eventually that drained out my account.
So it's borrowed money now?
Yes.
That's kind of rough. What do you do when that runs out?
Don't know.
Any idea of how long you can survive on what you've got left?
Not long.
Are you eligible for any kind of income supplement here in Canada?
I don't believe so. I've applied for social assistance because the probation officer suggested that I should. I explained the story to them. They said that they need to check with IRCC and CBSA to verify my status.
Yeah.
They were supposed to call me back on this Monday to let me know what was going on with that. They didn't get back to me, so I called and left a voicemail for them on Wednesday. I still haven't heard back from them. I'm sure that IRCC and CBSA are probably not being cooperative with them, and that's why. IRCC and CBSA, I believe, are not going to admit that they made any kind of mistake. They're not going to acknowledge that they allowed somebody who's not a Canadian citizen to be deported here.
To be back to Canada.
Right. And when I've spoken with CBSA myself while I was still in custody, because I was expecting they would deport me once I get released, they said that as far as they're concerned, I have status and they're not going to deport me. I asked them to clarify what they mean by have status, and they wouldn't. They just said, as far as we're concerned, you have status. That's it. We're not going to deport you. We're not doing anything. So their position is, I guess, well, my assumption is that their position is they're not going to do anything. They're just going to ignore the fact that I'm here.
Have you ever, well, clearly you're living in Canada right now, but have you lived in Canada in the past before?
No.
No. So they brought you back, brought you to Canada, and you've never been here before?
They deported me here in 2013, February 2013. I returned to Los Angeles in March for a family court hearing. My ex-wife called Homeland Security again, told them I was there. They came to the courthouse, arrested me, deported me here again a second time. At that point, I decided I was going to stay here until I got all of my documentation so I wouldn't continue to have these problems. Got my documentation, but then I decided that I was starting to like it a bit. I got my firearms license, decided to stay for a little while longer. 2016, I decided to return to Los Angeles. Cross the border, CBS, or not CBSA, what do they call it, CBP.
That's American side, I think, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Customs and Border Protection or Border Patrol.
Uh-huh.
Stopped me, questioned me, checked in the computer, saw I had problems with Homeland Security before, brought me into secondary, investigated, saw that I wasn't actually violating any laws, I didn't break any laws by crossing the border.
Mm-hmm.
So then they handed me over to ICE, that's Immigration and Customs Enforcement. They held me for a couple of weeks, tried to get the RCMP to request that I be sent back here so that that way they could release me without having to, admit they did anything wrong. Well, how can they say it? I don't want to sound paranoid. Since they had they had legal authority to arrest and detain and deport me because of a removal order from the immigration court. However, since they already know that I'm a U.S. citizen, they don't really have any legal justification for doing it. So they tried, and I've got emails to support all of this as well. They tried to get the RCMP to request that I be sent back here so that that way, rather than trying to get a travel document from the Canadian consulate again, they could just bring me to the border and hand me over to the RCMP. The RCMP said, he hasn't done anything wrong. We have no basis to seize his firearms license or to arrest him or anything.
Mm-hmm.
That went back and forth a bit, and then eventually Homeland Security brought me to Peace Arch Park, asked CBSA to contact the RCMP about it. The RCMP came down, arrested me for uttering threats, which was completely bogus. Later changed that to criminal harassment because of the website I created about my ex-wife, and then that led to the 2.5 years in custody.
Originally, was that a land crossing when you went? Were going to go back down there, or yeah?
Yep.
Gotcha. So you were in custody, and then you got out in December.
December 30th, I was released. My sentence ended.
Uh-huh.
But I still have 3 years of probation.
Uh-huh.
Which is why I'm here.
Belkenhaus, that's kind of short term.
Yep, 30 days expires on the 29th, I guess, Tuesday.
That's next week.
Yep.
What
am I going to do beyond that point?
Yeah.
Don't know yet.
No ideas, eh?
Nope. And I have 3 years of this to look forward to.
Any possibility that you can lengthen your stay here?
I can inquire.
Yeah. What's it like living there?
I don't know. I mean, what's the point of reference? What do I compare
I don't know,
to
I guess
my own apartment or jail?
Well,
or
I guess compared to what you're used to, I suppose.
Compared to jail, it's better because I can smoke. I can come and go as I want. Compared to my own apartment, obviously.
Yeah. How was it? What was it like in 2.5 years? Did you stay in jail?
Yes.
What was that like? Where did you serve that time?
A year and a half at North Fraser, and then 1 year at Fraser.
And how was that for you?
I don't really have an opinion.
No. Had you been in custody before? Well, you've mentioned some of the ones
in the U.S. In 4 years, Homeland Security was bouncing me around from one place to another. They would charge me with stuff just so they can give me to another agency and delay the process.
Yeah. I should really have the runaround there. So you're not sure what you're going to do, so you're kind of stuck here right now. I'm assuming that you've done some kind of work before.
I was working while I was here previously.
Yeah.
Legally, I'm not allowed to work. I don't have a social insurance.
But do you have an occupation? Or
software engineer.
So you've got a pretty good job, or you, the ability?
I have a pretty good career. I have no career. I incorporated a business while I was here previously, and so I was working through that corporation.
Your own business. So are you doing okay with that?
Yeah. Again, subjective. I don't know what you consider okay.
Well, I mean, were you able to provide yourself a comfortable living, I guess?
Yes.
How long did you do that for?
Are you asking how long was I a software engineer? Or
when
how long was
self-employed?
I incorporated the business, I think it was spring 2014, and while I was in custody, became defunct.
I see, yeah. And how did you become a software engineer?
I don't understand the question.
Well, what was your education that led you?
Computer science.
At which university did you go to?
Is it relevant?
I'm just wondering.
And I don't mean to be rude by asking if it's relevant.
Just kind of making a little bit of conversation there. Does that interest you in your life? Yeah. I always like to find out about people, how they end up, where they ended up.
Mm-hmm. I'd rather not say about that because that...
No worries.
That is a point of my life prior to when I would like to disclose any information. I don't think that it would be directly relevant to anything we're trying to accomplish here today, so...
Well, possibly, do you have a family doctor?
Nope. And I'm not qualified for MSP because I have no status here. And there's no private health insurance in Canada, seems insane to me.
But I'm assuming you must have had a family doctor at some point or other in your life.
Sure.
Ever had any serious medical problems?
Nope.
Any accidents, injuries? Of
nope.
Any kind? Hospitalizations for physical problems?
Nope.
I'm a psychiatrist, a mental health professional. Have you ever met with a psychiatrist before?
Nope.
Ever been hospitalized for any mental health reasons?
Nope.
No.
I've been in a hospital, but I've never been, how can I say,
admitted or?
Well, I mean, for example, I had a cyst on my tailbone.
Right. More of a medical reason.
Right.
Yes, a surgical.
For psychiatric or psychological issues, no. Never. No. Nothing.
Any problems in the past with anxiety?
Nope.
Depression?
Nope.
Okay. You on any medication now?
Nope.
Ever been in the past?
Well, just where I had an ear infection, so I had a prescription for Vicodin, but that was like 2001, 2002, somewhere around there. No kind of antidepressants or antipsychotics or anything to do with psychiatry.
Ever used any recreational drugs in the past?
I've done a little cocaine way back in the day.
Yeah.
But then again, in LA, I mean, everybody drinks and drives and does a little cocaine.
Okay. Marijuana?
I tried marijuana when I was a teenager. I don't like it.
Any other crystal meth, anything like that? Or any of the
I've been around tweakers.
Okay. How the cocaine would have been about how long ago?
Oh, goodness. 12, 15 years ago?
A long time ago. What was the route you used? Snorting it?
Oh, snorting it.
Ever into IV drugs?
No.
How's your physical health these days?
I'm not sure how to answer that. I seem to be in fine health.
Yeah, any physical complaints of any kind?
I have a pinched nerve between the 5th and 6th vertebrae that I got while I was in custody. The healthcare in custody sucks, so they just try to push it off as long as they can. It pretty much healed itself for a while, but then started acting up again a few months ago.
And what kind of physical symptoms does that give you?
When I hold my head normally, like straight like this, I guess the vertebrae are pushing closer together,
right.
So after a few moments, my thumb starts to get tingly and pins and needles.
In both, or?
Just this one.
Left hand.
Other than that, nope.
Yeah. Any other aches and pains? Or?
Just general old age stuff, arthritis and.
How do you sleep these days?
Fine, I suppose.
Yeah. About approximately how many hours did you get there?
7.
Okay.
I usually get a wake-up call for 6, so that way I can shower and such before everybody else at the shelter gets up.
With the amount of sleep you get, enough energy to do what you want to do during the day? How's your appetite?
No different than ever.
Yeah. Weight?
Consistent, 130.
Pretty stable there. And I asked you, in the past, you've never had any problems. You know, given the situation you find yourself in, I don't know, I might be kind of nervous or uptight that the Belkin shelter's staying there all the time. How about you or in the neighborhood?
It's pointless and futile to worry about things that are beyond your control, yeah. So I wouldn't bother.
Or does anybody give you any trouble down there?
Nope.
You picked on at all or hassled,
nope.
Threatened?
Nope. Never had any problems the whole time I was in jail either.
Nope.
Got along fine with everybody. I was a unit cleaner.
Were you? Yeah, like got a little job there too?
Yep.
How do you pass your time now?
Well, I've got my appeal of my criminal case and this probation thing. That takes up a bit of time. Other personal interests or pursuits.
You got any friends here in Canada?
Nope.
No.
Don't know anyone. Well, I mean, I have people that I knew while I was living here before, associates and co-workers and such. Never kept in touch with anybody after I was arrested. Have no friends or social associations in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Have no interest in making any. Don't want to be here any longer than I have to. As soon as this one probation condition that I not leave British Columbia is removed or the appeal is done and the probation is vacated, I have every intention of leaving Canada within 24 hours.
And you're returning to the States?
Or somewhere else.
Or somewhere else. So you're in the process of appealing this now, I guess, from what you, that sounds like a big process. Have you got any legal help for that, or are you taking that on yourself?
I'm doing it myself. Much of the appeal is based on claims of ineffective assistance of counsel for the lawyer that was imposed on me against my will at the trial to do the cross-examination of the complainant, who is my ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
There are mounds and mounds of evidence that he and the prosecutor were colluding to suppress evidence and admit perjured testimony by my ex-wife. Again, I don't want to sound delusional or paranoid. There's evidence to support all of it. I'm currently working on the affidavit for it. Let's see, what else?
Can I just ask you, it was an oversight on my part, I didn't look at the charge. What was the conviction of the charge?
Criminal harassment and possession of a firearm in a place not authorized. The firearms charge, it just means that my ATT, my authorization to transport, authorized me to possess my firearms in certain places. The Crown alleged that they said that I shipped my firearms to the U.S. I said that I brought them down to the U.S. There was nothing illegal about it, but their allegation was that in order to ship them, I had to transport the firearms from my apartment to the shipping place, and I wasn't authorized to have them at the shipping place. There was absolutely no evidence at all that I ever had any of my firearms, aside from a rifle, but that wasn't restricted, so it didn't. The ATC didn't apply to that. But I was found guilty on that, nonetheless. And the criminal harassment was mostly about a website that I created about my ex-wife. They also tied in email communication between my ex-wife and I, but what they did, they ignored all of the emails prior to 2014, so while I was still in Los Angeles, 2 or 3 years that she was causing problems for me and being belligerent and fighting with me all the time, they didn't bring up any of that, even though I wanted them to, because that background would have been critical, because it would have shown the jury that for years I was putting up with all of this nonsense from her. So instead, what ended up being presented to the jury was a scenario that made it seem like she hadn't done anything wrong at all, and here I am giving her all this hard time.
Well, it started off, obviously, there was a time where the two of you met and really got along and got married, had a child. What went wrong in the relationship?
She got pregnant.
Yeah.
I was 26, didn't want to have kids at that point because I was too young and didn't really have much interest in having kids, but
yeah.
She got pregnant, so it was out of my hands at that point. I agreed to whatever she wanted to do. I would support that. We separated about a year later.
Mm-hmm. How was that year that you were together?
It was fine initially, but she's the kind of person that there's always bad luck following her. There's bad circumstances all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a little annoyed with that after a while. And then when she started using drugs again, I decided the relationship was over.
Mm-hmm.
So we separated. She took our son to Phoenix. We were living in Los Angeles at the time. And then she took off to go back to Florida, left our son in Phoenix with her mother. So I went to Phoenix, got our son, brought him back to Los Angeles, applied for custody.
And you got custody?
Well, by default, because she came to see him one time, and then she went back to Florida. Never heard from her again after that. And then, like I said, 9 years later.
So your son lived with you for 9 years?
Yeah.
And she had gone
with no contact from her at all. Well, aside from like two phone calls in 2006, 2007. And then she shows up in 2011, takes some runs off to Arizona with him. Took me 3 months to get him back through the family court.
So can I ask you how she managed to just...
Well, because I was still in custody at the time. It was 3 weeks before I was released from Homeland Security custody.
And you were in custody then because...
The Homeland Security thing, when they were trying to deport me.
I got you, because they didn't think you were a U.S. citizen.
They claimed.
Yeah.
And Gabriel, my son, was staying with my friend Liz during that four-year period in Los Angeles. So then Desiree, my ex-wife, went to Los Angeles just before I was released from custody, grabbed Gabriel and ran to Arizona with him, tried to get custody, claiming that I hid him from her for 9 years. That issue came up in the California family court shortly thereafter. The judge said it wasn't very credible because all she would have had to do, since we already had a family court matter in the Los Angeles court, all she would have had to do was contact the court and say, oh, the father has absconded with the child. He asked her why she didn't do that. She said, oh, I didn't know I could have done that. So the court ordered her to return him to me immediately. And then she starts trying to delay it, and she starts calling lawyers to see if there was some way that she could get around having to return him. finally, a lawyer told her, no, don't play any games with this. The court ordered you to do this. And then, a little over a year after that, she calls Homeland Security, gets me arrested, detained. And then that's when I ended up being deported to Canada, and I lost custody of our son.
So she made up did she make up the story that you worked from the U.S.?
She didn't make it up. I mean, she exploited that because I had already been ordered removed from. Well, there's more background to it. I mean, for it to make sense.
Yeah.
While I was in Homeland Security custody, one of the things that they charged me with was perjury and false claim of U.S. citizenship. They said, if you just plead guilty to this, then we'll request time served and you can be out of custody. And I said, no, I'm going to fight this because this is nonsense. Anyway, I was found guilty of that nonetheless. Had a court-appointed attorney, and that's when I decided to start reading up on the law and representing myself. Anyway, the immigration court then used that conviction as the basis to order me removed from the United States, saying, well, you were convicted of perjury and false claim of U.S. citizenship, so obviously you're not a U.S. citizen. Res judicata. Once one court makes a determination based on some factual basis of something another court can't make, the ruling that would contradict that.
So once one court says this is the way it is, they can't change it.
That's it. From that point forward, that is reality, regardless of what the truth is.
Well, what do you do about that going forward? Do you ultimately like to return to the United States? Aren't you still going to be faced with that problem in the future?
I don't know. I mean, that question calls for speculation.
All right. Uh-huh.
Sorry. I mean, most of the times that I've gone back to the U.S. since I've been up here, I've had no problems. Homeland Security knows who I am now, and it's just this one last time that they made a big deal about it. And
what do you do for travel documents these days? They're so tight at the borders these days.
They're really not. I have a U.S. birth certificate and a DC driver's license.
That's all you need.
Sufficient.
Uh-huh. No passport or anything like that?
Passport's only required if you fly. If you fly. Mm-hmm. If you're a U.S. citizen entering at the border, technically, if you're a U.S. citizen, you don't even need to go through the checkpoint. The U.S. government cannot legally bar a U.S. citizen from entering the country, and a U.S. citizen can enter the United States from any point at all.
You have to do border crossing,
right?
Theoretically, yeah. So you don't see that as a problem.
I don't think that Homeland Security cares because they know who I am now. I think that my ex-wife is the only thing that would cause any kinds of problems. My son now he turned 18 in September. I haven't heard from him since before I was arrested. I've tried to contact him since I've been out. I've sent an email to the email address that he had before I was arrested, and I sent a message to his Instagram account. I haven't received any response to either, so.
That's kind of sad. Any idea what he's up to? Or?
No. The most recent information I found on the internet is an Instagram post from November 2017, and then nothing after that. But you're a psychiatrist, so you know about sociopathy, and so think of a textbook case of that. That's my ex-wife.
But not your son.
Well, I don't think that my son is associated.
No, I'm just wondering what he would. I guess he'd probably be either graduated or will be graduating this
year. He's in his last year of high school.
Last year.
Unless, of course, he failed, but he made the honor roll last year, so I would guess he's doing well.
How'd you find out he made the honor roll?
On the internet.
Did you? So it's unlikely that that's happened. So he'll be graduating this year?
I assume so.
Yeah, I wonder if he'll go on and do. I guess he was on the honor roll, maybe eligible to go on to university or something like that.
Sure.
You miss him?
I don't really understand the question.
Right.
Because miss, I'm an engineer and a scientist.
Okay.
I understand what emotions are, and I understand the physical sensations that people induce, and but to ask me if I miss something or how I feel.
Did you get any of those emotional sensations and those kind of topics?
No.
Not particularly. Would you like, I bet you'd like to see him again, though.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
I have a duty to do everything that I can to raise him to the best of my abilities. I'm completely incapable of doing that now since I can't phrase it as, because it's technically not correct to say that she had me deported. Mm-hmm. However, she took very deliberate and strategic steps to cause my deportation to happen. And then I lost custody of him, and then she had control, and then it got harder and harder to have any contact with him, and then once I was arrested, he completely cut off all contact.
Now, I know you're, from what you said, not an emotional guy, but you must be pretty annoyed at her, though.
Yes. Obviously, I despise her. However, I'm not going to do anything illegal, and I would never harm another person unless in self-defense, or defense of another. Those are just some of my ethics.
Ethics?
Ethics.
Uh-huh.
My morals, my beliefs.
But my understanding, from what I've heard, people are concerned that you might do something to her.
Based on what?
I don't know.
Exactly. if you take the Crown's position, what they did was they took some of the blog posts or some of the emails between us, they ignored all of the context and looked only at a couple of sentences.
Picked out a few things.
Yes.
Broader.
If you look at the blog post in its entirety, or if you look at the email conversation in its entirety,
yeah.
It's very innocuous. There's no reason to believe that I would ever harm anybody or do anything to her. And in fact, since I despise her so much, I would get much more gratification out of knowing that her life is miserable because of her own actions. And the purpose of the website was to make it publicly known the kinds of things that she has done so that people wouldn't want to have anything to do with her. Not to cause her any harm directly, but use her own actions against her.
What kinds of things did you put on the website?
About her lying in the family court, about her lying to the police, about her coming to Los Angeles, grabbing our son, who she had only seen two times, and running off to another state with him. Her own Facebook post where she's talking about, oh, she's so happy she's got her son back, without any regard whatsoever for how that might affect him.
Yeah.
about her filing false reports with Homeland Security in order to get deported so that she can get custody of her son, et cetera, et cetera.
And putting this on a website for others to see, I gather.
Of course.
Yeah.
If a person does horrible things to other people, then they shouldn't get upset when those people that they've affected tell other people the things that they've done. There's nothing on the website that was false. There's nothing that was embellished or...
So when you do that, were there any consequences to you after she discovered that you had this website? What happened then?
Well, first she tried to get an order of protection, but an order of protection would have nothing to do with the website because I wasn't in the United States and the website wasn't hosted in the United States. Here's an example of the original release. She convinces herself that a U.S. court would have the authority to compel somebody outside of the U.S. to do something.
Or to not do something, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So she gets this order of protection, and then she gets mad and says, I'm not complying with the order of protection. And I tell her, but I'm not in the United States, and according to you, and according to the United States government, I'm not a United States national, therefore they have no authority over me.
And an order of protection, can you explain that to me? What that
means? Oh, it's a restraining order.
I see. Uh-huh.
The order of protection only prohibited me from contacting her or going around her home. It had nothing to do with the website. Then she convinces herself that the order of protection is a first step that would be required to get the hosting company to take the website down. But the website was hosted in Iceland. So a U.S. order of protection, or even a direct order from a U.S. court, would mean nothing to a company in Iceland.
And if maybe it was in the United States, you could do something.
If it was in the United States,
okay.
But
mm-hmm.
even still, the order of protection wouldn't compel a U.S. hosting provider to take the website down. What they would need is an order from the court telling them to take the website down. So she makes up these beliefs, and then she clings to them, and even though all of the proof is to the contrary, she continues to claim to the U.S.
Was she saying her reasoning for wanting this all taken down? Or?
Before we proceed with that, can I get some water?
Oh, of course.
Sorry, I have a tickle in my throat. Your question was...
I was just wondering, what was her... was it some fear? What was her... Like, how complete was her motivation?
I don't believe that she wanted the website taken down at all. Because,
no?
For example, after I was arrested, I was incapable of responding to emails. Mm-hmm. All she would have had to do was file a complaint with the hosting provider. The hosting provider then would have sent an email to me
mm-hmm.
asking me to respond. I would be able to since I'm in jail. And then they would have suspended the account. But they didn't do that. The one complaint that she did file with any kind of hosting provider was to the domain registrar, not to the website hosting provider. The domain registrar was saying, well, this is an issue with the website. It's got nothing to do with the domain name. I mean, we're the wrong company. But then she never filed another complaint with the hosting company after that. So in her typical fashion, what she did was a few minor steps to make it seem like she was doing something to get the website taken down, but they were all the wrong things. Kind of like getting the order of protection.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
she went about it the wrong way.
Right, and made no attempt to actually do it the right way.
Uh-huh. Which again would have been, what could she have done the right way was to contact the...
Well, once I was arrested and I couldn't respond to emails, she could have contacted the hosting provider in Iceland and filed a complaint with them. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Okay, good. So how did then from there, where did it go? So there was the website and the troubles with that, and how did it proceed from there?
Well, when she got the order of protection, and then that ended up doing nothing, so then she went to the news media. The U.S. news media didn't care because they saw that everything on the website was true, and all I'm doing is just telling everybody about the horrible stuff that this horrible woman has done. But then she goes to CBC. Apparently CBC is a very feminist organization, and so a journalist at CBC decided to run with the story. They interviewed both of us. From an hour and a half interview with me, they took about a minute and a half of footage that they could distort to make it seem a certain way. So then they ran this story that made it seem like she was this poor, helpless woman who had never done anything wrong, and I'm just this angry ex-husband who is mad because she left me or whatever reason, or because she got custody of our son and I wasn't happy with the court proceedings.
See, can I ask you for a moment? How
sure.
Do you agree to be interviewed by CBC?
Even if I didn't, I mean, they still would have ran the story.
Yeah. You didn't want to be even interviewed by me, let alone CBC.
Well, the difference is, if you provide the Crown a diagnosis that I have some kind of mental disorder,
mm-hmm.
then that goes on my record,
that's
and
that
the Crown would use that to discredit me.
Yeah,
now,
sure.
The Crown knows, or they should know by now, that I have all of this evidence to prove all of this stuff that they did. I've got the RCMP, or the recordings of the RCMP interviews, where my ex-wife is laughing and joking with them, which should have proven that the Crown and the RCMP should have known that she was full of crap, that she wasn't really afraid for her safety.
So where did you reach the point, though, that it comes out that she's afraid for her safety? So that would be...
Like I bring up in the appeal in my affidavit, there was no claims of being afraid for her safety until after she spoke to the news media in January 2016. I suspect either what happened was the journalist from CBC kind of coached her on what to say about that, or after the news story ran, she probably got a bunch of emails from people telling her, oh, well, say like this and act this way.
And she, what did she say she was afraid of?
She was claiming that she was, well, eventually, her claims of fear for her safety became more and more embellished as time went on, as she wasn't getting the response that she was seeking.
Mm-hmm.
Until eventually she got to the point where she was saying that I openly and publicly stated on the internet that if I could get away with it, I would kill her or murder her or shoot her or something. And that all stems from one email where I told her about a conversation that I had had with our son, Gabriel. He had asked me if I would shoot her, and then I explained to him about how shooting somebody would be immoral and it would be wrong and you could go to prison for the rest of your life. And for those reasons, I wouldn't do it, but I would have no qualms about shooting her because I despise her so much. However, the problem is, or I shouldn't say the problem, the fact remains it's still immoral and illegal. So, no matter how much somebody might want to do something, something is wrong, so you don't do it. There's lots of things that people want to do, but they don't do.
If you think of something or might want to do it, but there's other reasons not to do it. Either your moral convictions, or it's against the law, or
yes,
or a variety of.
And like I said, in that very email, that is not intended to be any kind of threat. I would never harm anybody, you or anyone else, unless it was in self-defense. And any time I ever made any reference to firearms in any of the emails to her, I was always very clear with her that I'm not saying this to be in any way kind, any way threatening. I'm only mentioning it in passing or because you brought this up.
So where did that lead to then? That was that that little statement that you wouldn't have any qualms to...
Well, of course.
That would happen.
Okay, so I published a blog post before the CDC story ran because the journalist at CDC told me some of the stuff that Capuano was saying. And she told me that Capuano was claiming she was afraid for her safety, that I'm going to sneak into the U.S. and go down there with some of my registered firearms, which is, that in itself is ridiculous, because if I was going to go down there and harm her with firearms, I wouldn't use the ones that are registered here in Canada. I would buy one in Arizona, where there's no registration or anything. But so I wrote a blog post about explaining about how these allegations or these claims are ridiculous. That blog post, eventually the Crown then tried to distort that into being, oh, this is Mr. Fox's plan, this is what he intends to do. But if you read the entire blog post, you see I clearly state that the purpose of this post is to show how ridiculous what she's claiming is. But anyway, when all of that was going on, the RCMP had put put my PAL, my firearms license, into a restricted state so I couldn't purchase any additional restricted firearms while they investigated because of the criminal harassment complaint. Once they concluded their investigation, they determined that there was no basis to revoke or suspend my my PAL, so everything went back to normal. That should tell you right there, obviously, there was no concern. A few months later, though, I went back to the U.S., and then all of a sudden they decided, oh, this guy's going to do something, we need to be worried.
RCMP or U.S.?
RCMP.
RCMP. And then what happened?
Then I was arrested for criminal harassment. They added some additional firearms charges initially, so I would be denied bail. Those all got dropped eventually, but...
And then was that what ultimately led to your being incarcerated?
Yes. So anyway, now you have pretty much the entire background.
Had you ever been in trouble with the law before all this mess?
Defined in trouble.
Well, arrested?
Yes, 2 DUIs in Los Angeles, 2002, 2003. But in California, DUI is not a huge, serious deal like it is up here. I understand up here it's very strict and they take it very seriously. In LA, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has a DUI.
Have you ever been aggressive to another person?
Nope.
Harmed anybody else?
No. Never assaulted anybody, never threatened anybody, never attempted to use any kind of force against anybody.
So it seems to me, I guess if they're looking for something delusional, it really revolves around your citizenship.
Mm-hmm. And as I said, I've got documentation to support what I'm saying.
Yeah.
On my laptop. Well, actually, I've got some printouts of it as well.
Uh-huh.
That I received from IRCC and CBSA through Freedom of Information requests. Clearly states on there, I was born in the United States of America. So...
Do you have any family still around?
No. Parents are dead.
Parents
are dead. Never kept in touch with any family. Ran away from home when I was 14.
Okay.
Had an uncomfortable childhood. My grandparents eventually got back in touch with me. They helped me out. They helped me to go to university, etc. But I had no interest in having any contact with my parents.
Any siblings?
Not that I'm aware of.
So you ran at home at the age of 14?
Yes.
Where did life take you to then?
I'd rather not get into the details of that aspect.
Because I'm just thinking, well, if you ran away from home, there must have been a period of time that you're away from school, and obviously you went back again.
It was difficult. A lot of times staying at friends' places. for a period of time, I would rent a room, like in a rooming house or a room in someone's house or something. it was difficult, but I made it through.
Well, it sounds that way, yeah. It sounds like you did all right for yourself. You became a software engineer. That seems like a pretty good occupation these days.
More so in the U.S. than in Canada. I mean, the pay is much better down there.
So going forward, you're appealing?
Yep.
I don't know if you want to speculate. What if you're unsuccessful in your appeal?
Oh, I fully expect I'm going to be unsuccessful.
Do you?
Yep.
Then what?
Then I'm still going to publish everything. I mean, regardless of what happens with the appeal, I've still got all of the evidence, all of the proof of the collusion. Well, I can't say that I have concrete proof of collusion. I have circumstantial proof of collusion between the defense attorney, Lagomat, and the Crown attorney, Mark Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So that's still going to be published either way. And, when I eventually return to the U.S., the criminal harassment conviction is not going to matter, because in the U.S. everybody looks at this and they think this is ridiculous. Like, what kind of country is going to prosecute a person for simply giving back to this woman what she was doing to him? Consider, for example, they make this big deal about the fact that I create this website where I publish a bunch of true stuff about her. She goes to the news media, tells a bunch of lies. The news coverage here in Canada far outweighs the attention that the number of hits that the website got. So she was essentially doing the same thing to me as I did to her with the website, except I was telling the truth. She was lying.
They believed her and didn't believe you.
Well, of course. I didn't realize at the time that there is such a bias here in Canada about a woman against a man. If a woman makes an allegation, it doesn't matter if the man is innocent or guilty. Everybody just assumes the woman is telling the truth. What's amazing is, on the website, there was all this proof that what she was claiming was not true.
Mm-hmm.
Still, most people didn't want to hear.
I was just thinking, the gun ownership must make things worse, though, doesn't it? Because guns always, well, especially here in Canada, that's worrisome for some people on guns.
The Crown obviously was trying to exploit that. They were adamant about keeping the firearms charge on there, even though there was no evidence. At the preliminary inquiry, I wanted the court-appointed attorney to challenge that, because there was no evidence to support the firearms charge whatsoever. He did absolutely nothing. He stood up immediately and said, we concede to the firearms charge. Again, why I decided to represent myself.
How long have you owned firearms for?
I'd say I'm 45. My first gun, I guess I was about 18 or 19.
Mm-hmm. And how come you own guns?
I like guns.
Yeah, what do you use them for?
Shooting, recreation. In the U.S., I also use them for defense.
Uh-huh. But here in
Canada, you're not allowed to. So.
No. What kind
Well, I can't say that you're not allowed to in Canada. You're allowed to use equal or lesser force. If somebody breaks into your home with a gun, you're allowed to use a gun to defend yourself. The problem is, the storage laws would require you to keep the ammunition separate from the gun.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be locked up in a safe or some locked compartment and have a trigger lock on it. Yeah.
Uh-huh. In the United States, that's not so.
No, in the United States, I would just keep one in my nightclub.
Yeah.
If somebody were to break into my home,
did that ever happen? Did you ever have to, or you didn't fire it at somebody, at least hold somebody at bay with it?
There's no police records to support it one way or the other, so I would say, officially, no. The police saw that it was entirely justified when I was living in Phoenix, and so they just said, good for you.
And
I didn't kill him. I shot him in the shoulder.
Recreational use? What would that be for?
Target practice.
At a range? Or
yeah, I used to have a membership at the range in Port Coquitlam.
Okay. And what sort of guns have you had over the years?
Well, I was up here. I had a Beretta 92FS. Do you know much about them?
No, that's a pistol of some kind?
Yes, the Beretta 92FS and the Beretta PX4 are both pistols. They were both 9mm.
Yeah.
I had a, what was it, a Browning 380, based on the design of the 1911. Another pistol.
Yeah.
Ruger SR-45, which is a 45 caliber pistol.
Mm-hmm.
I had gotten a World War II Mauser rifle for my son, because he likes the antiques and the older ones. In the U.S., I had another Beretta 92FS, Springfield Armory's 1911, an Astra A60, I guess it was, 380, a Beretta 92, and a couple other, I can remember, Remington shotgun.
What would happen to them all?
The ones in the U.S.?
Oh, you've got some in the U.S.
I declined to comment on the ones in the U.S. because of probation conditions
sure.
and such.
But there might be some down in the U.S., I gather. Any here in Canada?
Nope. All of the Canadian ones, the handguns, were all registered, and so the RCMP knew about them. The rifle wasn't registered because it wasn't required to be.
So again, if you're successful, though it sounds like you got your doubts about it.
Successful with?
With your appeal and being able to return to the United States. What's your plan? What are you going to do with yourself?
I can't plan that far ahead because too much is up in the air at this point. The reason that I doubt that I'm going to prevail on the appeal is because my experience so far with the justice system here in BC is that, in my opinion, there seems to be a lot of corruption. The fact that the Crown should have known my ex-wife was lying. As I said, there's the recordings of the RCMP interviews where she's laughing and joking. But they proceeded with prosecuting the case anyway, I assume, because of the media coverage that it got. And then they pushed to have this lawyer appointed to do the cross-examination, even though that would be 90% of the trial. And then that lawyer refused to bring up all of this evidence from before, plus they refused to cross-examine her on her perjured testimony. So, based on all of that, and then based on the fact that at the sentencing, the judge completely disregarded all of the evidence that I brought up about my ex-wife committing perjury at the trial, all of the mitigating factors, etc. So, it seems to me that most likely, yes, I'm going to be, they're just going to rule in favor, sorry.
So if you're stuck here, would you be able to go back to work?
Legally, no.
Even though these organizations claim you're Canadian?
Which organizations?
Well, like the Canadian Border Services?
See, this is what I find fascinating, is I tell people that I was born in the United States, I have the United States birth certificate, and the U.S. authorities and the Canadian government both acknowledge I was born in the United States. I've got documentation from them to prove it, yet, as you just said, these agencies claim that I'm Canadian. Which agencies are claiming I'm Canadian?
And I guess you don't have any identification to say you're Canadian.
There is absolutely no documentation to say that I'm Canadian at all. And
you're
more than welcome to grab my laptop bag. I'm
sure you can prove it, locked up. No, I'm just wondering going forward, so you don't have a social insurance number?
Nope. No interest in getting one. Social assistance had said that they will see if there's some way that I can get a work permit or a social insurance number. And I said to them, I don't want a work permit or a social insurance number. I want to get kicked out of Canada. I want to go home. In fact, I don't even care which country I go to. Even if the United States says, I'm going to acknowledge that you're a U.S. citizen. I don't care. Send me to Israel or somewhere.
So then you need a passport, wouldn't you?
I guess we'll have to deal with that.
Okay, I'm just wondering.
So why is it that yourself and the Crown and the courts and all of these people never want to see the proof to support what I'm saying? Every time I go to court and I say, well, look, I've got proof here to support the claims I make. No, we don't want to see it.
I guess just in the interest of time, I mean, if you'd like to come back another day.
It's in my bag. I mean.
Because it sounds like it's going to take a little bit of.
Pull a document out and show you that the Canadian government clearly acknowledges I was born in the United States. I mean, that would take all of 3 seconds.
Well, if you'd like, I can't see any reason why not, if you'd like to show us. Sure.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Sure. Yeah, please. You want to get your thing in?
I have a scanned copy of my laptop, of course, but there's the cover letter, so you can even see what it was I was requesting from them. All records pertaining to Richard Reese and or Patrick Fox, same person.
That's another name of yours?
I changed my name to Richard Reese back in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
And you see what that says on there? Country of birth.
Oh, right, yeah. But it's citizenship unknown, but country of birth is the United States.
Yes. CBSA, same thing. In fact, CBSA is just using the information from IRCC.
This is the same thing, isn't it?
Yep. But what it's showing, what I'm showing you is that CBSA is just getting the same information that IRCC is using. They're just relaying.
Those are the same two documents, are they?
Well, yeah, but see, this one's from CBSA. That one's from IRCC.
Oh, I see.
I submitted a Freedom of Information request to both agencies.
Again, for my ignorance, CBSA, that's Canadian?
Yeah, Canada Border Services Agency.
And AF?
IRCC is
U.S.
No, IRCC is Immigration, Refugees, and Citizenship Canada.
So according to their, this piece of information, they see who's being born in the United States?
Yes.
Although they don't give the place of birth, eh?
No, because that would not be relevant.
Any other support of that? You don't have a birth certificate.
I do have a birth certificate.
You do?
From Florida.
Yeah?
Yes.
You have a copy of that here?
Yes.
Right. Show us that.
It's a photocopy. It's not the original.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
I ask you now, who's really delusional? Mark Meyer and my ex-wife? Or me? Where's their evidence to support any of their claims?
You would allow us to have a copy of this, would you?
No.
There it is?
That you can have a copy of.
There you go.
Thank you.
We'll just get that on the way. We'll get it on the way out.
Yeah.
Or I could email it to you. Like I said, I have an electronic copy. I scanned them. Are we done then? Does that mean we're done?
I guess. I'm just wondering what, if anything, we can do to be of help. I guess what... Yes, we are done today. Let me just speak to your probation officer and see what, if anything, they were hoping for by having you come to see us.
They were hoping for you to say that I am schizophrenic and delusional and need to be locked up and can't be trusted, and anything that I say bad about the government cannot be true.
I don't think you're schizophrenic. I can safely say that.
But you're not willing to say that I'm not delusional. Interesting.
Well,
a delusion is, after all, the belief in something that isn't true, or that all of the evidence...
Well, I know you've certainly got evidence to support your belief, so then it couldn't be delusional, right?
There is no evidence that's contrary to it.
Yeah. Bit of an unusual situation, I have to admit.
Yes. Yes, it is. And I also have copies, like I said, of the forged documents, the travel document applications, but those I don't have a printout of on my computer.
All right. Well, let me just see what they wanted. You want anything from us?
Restroom?
Okay.
Yes. All right. We have that.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming up here today. I guess if there's any further need based on our conversation with the probation officer, we'll get you in contact with you, but I doubt it.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah.
Sure.
Good luck.
Oh, but everything? Oh, we can get that, yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, not to worry.
Sure. He had suggested that I should ask them about that or talk to them about that. The thing is, their policy is to allow people to stay there for 30 days. They make exceptions sometimes. I don't believe that my circumstances warrant an exception. I realize that my circumstances are abnormal, but I don't think it would be proper for me. I mean, if they offer, that's fine.
Right. So just this page, you want me to copy?
Sure.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, but would you go over with me?
Well, there's a place called the Yukon just up the street from me.
Yeah.
But I have a creeping suspicion that everything is going to work out fine.
Okay. Do you have the phone number for you, Kyle?
Nope.
Do you want me to get it for you?
Nope.
I think that my probation officer wants me to stay at the Falcon House because they don't like the idea of me leaving there and then them not knowing where I'm staying.
Oh, yeah, I guess you have to let them go anyway, right?
Within 2 days, or 2 days prior to.
Okay. If you can't get a hold of them, just let me know if they have
I'm sure that that's not going to happen. I mean, well, I figure I'm Jewish and God is going to take care of me.
How's it going?
You have a card? Thank you.